This episode of the UAV Digest is sponsored by Go Engineer, provider of design, engineering, and 3D printing solutions for the aerospace and unmanned vehicles industries. To learn more, visit theuavdigest.com/goengineer. And by UAV Propulsion Tech, a provider of propulsion, servo, autopilots, and rescue and recovery parachute solutions for the unmanned aerial vehicle market. For more information, check out www.uavpropulsiontech.com. You're listening to episode 164 of the UAV Digest. I'm Max Flight in Hartford, Connecticut.
And I'm David Vanderhoof in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. And I guess we owe our listeners just a little bit of an apology that you don't know how to calculate time zones. And I don't really have a day job that sometimes drives me absolutely bonkers. So we apologize for missing last week. But I think with our guest, we'll be more than happy to make it up from. So
yes,
I don't. We have him wound up already. So I guess I should introduce our guest and a really good friend. And as far as I'm concerned, and a Parker Jokers. And Parker is a full time private drone operator. Has a business called Prop Heads.
Propeller Heads.
Propeller Heads. You know, you had to screw up the Skype name, you know.
Yeah.
Your Twitter name and
it's definitely shortened so that I can get the domain, but there's already a band out there with the same name, so I have to be kind of careful about how I use that. So.
And, of course, Parker was with us back in July of 2014. I remember that episode because I recorded it from a hotel room in Ocean City, Maryland. And so that was July 2014, episode 52. Parker, welcome. You're so young. And Parker, welcome back.
Thanks. It's nice to be back. It's like coming home. You guys were one of the very first media interviews I did when we got started. And it was kind of a wild time. We had just flown for a congressman. And turns out that congressman was on the FAA subcommittee. So there were a lot of people that were using that as a cudgel. He backed me up, and I ended up not getting in any trouble at all. But I got my FAA letter that week, and I became a man. So it's been an adventure since then.
Now, Parker is broadcasting or recording from his mobile studio this episode, which means his
it's
car.
Called the Prop Heads Mobile CP. Yeah.
There we go. Post. So pay attention to, you know, the important stuff, Parker. If you scream suddenly, can't talk now, we'll understand.
Yeah. Oh, my God, I think the cops saw me. So, no, I'll be all right. I'm driving to Norfolk to teach in a military photojournalism workshop over the weekend. And I just shot all day today for NVIDIA for a really cool job where we were flying. They had a vision system on a small drone that was scanning boxes in a warehouse. And so NVIDIA was doing a story on this technology. And they, what better to shoot a drone than another drone? So we came in and did a little air-to-air combat with the guy and won. But he managed to get his footage, and we got our footage, and it turned out really, really well. So I think we overwhelmed him a little bit when we put the Inspire 6 inches away from his drone and held it there.
Now, Parker, you're an FAA Part 107 licensed business, and you provide a lot of services, aerial photography, cinematography, thermal imaging, all sorts of things to a variety of clients, I guess I call them. Now, how long have you been full-time doing this?
I retired from the Air Force in October of 14 to do this full time. And I had been doing it every spare minute for about a year prior to my retirement as well. Since then, we moved to New York from my base in New Jersey, where I was stationed at McGuire. And I've been paying the rent ever since. I like to say, we'll fly for food. People say, well, can you shoot this? And I go, well, yeah, I shoot pretty. The grand secret of being a drone pilot is, the subject that I'm shooting is pretty much irrelevant. The environment that I shoot changes, and that's important. But the subjects that I'm shooting, be it a car or a house or a party, the same safety rules apply and the same application of the drone applies. You just push the trigger and get the picture. It's a lot of the prep. I'm finding that the prep is the most important part of the job.
Surely. Now, we just recently had the InterDrone conference, International Drone Conference and Exposition. That was September 7th through 9th, this year, 2016, in Las Vegas. And Parker, you attended the event. So what are some of your overall takeaways from that?
This is my second year going to InterDrone. And the first year was the last year that they had it. We were at the inaugural. So last year, I walked away thinking very strongly that it was the year of the Inspire. Almost every single manufacturer there was selling parts for it, camera mounts for it. All of the pros that I spoke with had just kind of admitted to me kind of underneath their hands that, yeah, dude, I got one too. I kind of like it a lot. We had just transitioned over as well, and I wanted to hate it, and I couldn't. I like to say that, you know, say what you want about the Evil Empire, they make one hell of a Death Star. It's it's a great rig, and it's just been getting better and better with more firmware, and the pro version came out, and we have two of those now. So that was last year. It was all about the Inspire. They had just announced the Inspire 1 Pro. We knew that it was an S800 killer. We knew it was an S1000 killer because no one was going to lift a full-size GH4 when you can lift an X5. It's the same camera. So there was a really big kind of groundswell. It was a huge kind of a shock to our systems. Like, guys, the home build market just died. No one's going to buy one of our rigs anymore for $12,000 when they can get an Inspire for $3,000 and do more with more information. And who am I to say that they shouldn't when I'm flying one too? So it was kind of a moment where we realized that maybe it's time to stop tinkering and start being artists. And it allowed us to focus very heavily on going back to the basics, which was, it's all about the photography. It's all about why you're flying it in the first place. If you've got to get all the witches in the coven to sing on the same tune at the same time, you're probably not paying attention to why you're there in the first place. You're worrying about your drone flaking out on you. So switching from a home built type system to a store bought system took a shock to the pride, but it also made a much more effective product in the end run. We would show people shots that we took with our A6000, and then they would look at the Inspire stuff and they go, this is amazing, because it was stable. It just looked better. That was the shock to our system. It was like, all right, we know the sensor's not as good, but when the client loves it because it just comes off as really well done, maybe that's what we should stop. So that was last year. So this year I walked in thinking I was going to see all kinds of toys for Inspires, and DJI had changed the game again by releasing their SDK. And so what a lot of people were doing, since everyone was flying Inspires, a lot of smart people got into writing software for it. So you have a lot of companies out there that are doing drone deployment and drone application software, you know, mapping, thermal information, getting your flight logs turned into FAA logs, all of the stuff that's data automation and software based to make that tool that you already own more effective. So now I can sideload apps onto my Inspire and fly routes with MapPilot or Drone Deploy or a number of other apps. That's really changed the way that it's working. So this was more of a walking around, and you kind of walk up to a booth and you go, so what do you do? Because I don't see anything on your desk here. I see a keychain, and that's all you know. I don't see any hardware to touch and hold on to. That was kind of an eye opener, and I'm thinking, well, I've already got the software solutions I needed, but it's really interesting to see what people are offering. The other thing that I saw that blew my doors off, that really had me saying, wow, I actually went back two or three times, is they had a drone. They had a Matrice 100 there that was flying for 2.5 hours on a fuel cell, hydrogen fuel cell. It had a tank from a paintball gun, and they were in talks with a manufacturer to make much lighter tanks. And soon they'll be able to put tanks inside spars because they can pressurize a carbon fiber spar to a certain extent. This is research stuff. This was IP. This is not finished product. But they're going to sell this technology to a company that's going to build it into their frames, and you're never going to see the tank.
Wow.
Recharges in 10 seconds, and the only outflow is water vapor. And it will fly for, the larger the drone, the more efficient the system. So you can put it on a Matrice 100 and fly for 2.5 hours. You could put it on something like an S900, and it would fly for probably 3.5. And you would recharge with like $1 in hydrogen. You put a tank in your car, and you'd refill it all summer off one gas tank.
That's just amazing, Parker. I mean, I remember 20 Staggered. Years ago. It is. We 20 years ago, we all thought that we'd have fuel cells, and, you know, in the back of our house, you know, powering the house and everything. And that's never happened. It's kind of amazing that there are some commercial applications of fuel cells, but this is fascinating that where we may see them really shine is in quadcopters of all things.
Yeah, it was the size of a paperback book, and it weighed nothing. It was very light. The fuel cell itself was just a very thin metal matrix. And they were talking the price for this module would be in the sub $1,000 range.
Hmm. Fantastic.
Blah, blah, blah. Yeah, shut up and take my money, right? So I was immediately struck by the fact that I could buy this system and then never have to buy another battery again. I was also really amazed by the fact that the thing about we're not going to see these in cars for a while because it's not scalable. It takes a lot more gas to fill up your Prius than it does to fill up a drone. So I can go to the gas seller. Every town's got one that sells industrial gases for labs and hospitals and stuff. I can go get a tank and just rent the tank and buy the gas. And for $50 for the summer, fly all summer long. But it takes a lot more gas to fill a car. But the guys, it was Intelligent Energy, I believe is the name of the company. I said, I don't care how, I don't care what, I want to be involved in this. I want to help. I want to be a test case. I want one of these on my drone, like now. What do I got to do? So the infrastructure doesn't need to really exist. It's already there. We can get the gas for this amount of gas. We don't need to worry about how am I going to fill up a tank the size of a water barrel. I need to fill up a tank the size of a soda bottle. And it was just insane. It was one of those things where you look at it and you go, okay, that's the future. I see it now. There's no reason to use LiPos.
Parker, were you able to listen to any of the two keynote addresses?
I was there working with another company called KenCast that does live broadcast technology, and so I was working the show floor the entire show. I did not get a chance to listen to anyone speak. I heard quite a bit about the stuff that was coming down the pipe, but I didn't really get involved in any of those conversations.
Okay.
Sorry. I was watching the tech, which is much more mature. 2 years ago, 3 years ago when we started, it was, king of the nerd with his dream. You had the skill set to build a drone, and that made you special. And that was where you started. You started by having the tenacity to learn this stuff, and the learning curve was vertical, and you'd build your own system, and you'd deploy it in with clients that would have never seen anything like this before. And you'd walk into a realtor's office, or you'd walk into a production office, and you'd say, this is what we've got. And they're just, wow, that's really cool. I need to do that.
Can you characterize the attendees? What were they like?
I met a lot of people that had just gotten their 3.3, their one, sorry, not their 3.3, their 3.3, their 107s, old habits die hard, guys. Sure. Had just gotten their 107s.
It's only a year, and that old habit is only a year old, Parker. That's really sad.
And everything we've ever touched in our hands that has something to do with drones didn't exist 3 years ago. That's what still boggles my mind. 36 months ago, the gestation period of an elephant, we didn't even have drones. It's insane. I met a lot of people that were just getting started or trying to start. And I also met a lot of people that were recruiting. Do you have a 107? Great. You want a job? Gulp. What? Yeah, I need 100 pilots. When? Well, I need them now. My company has been waiting for this. Now we're pulling the trigger. So I heard that a lot. A lot of large deployment, power companies, rail lines, large utilities, land surveyors, big companies with a lot of money to drop a lot of dough on a lot of systems. Custom build systems. I kind of came up with the analogy that I was a chef. I like to cook. I made my own pizzas. I got so good at it that I opened up a restaurant to sell pizzas. And people came from a couple miles around, and people just knew that if they wanted a really good pizza, they'd come to my place and they'd sit down for a good meal and they'd be happy and they'd have good service. Then I get a tap on my shoulder and I look over and the guy goes, "Hi, I'm Domino's." So that's what it's like to be a drone pilot now. We're no longer the king of the nerds, because anyone, including me, can go to the store and buy the same tech that I'm using. So it ends up coming back to your tenacity for the art. Anyone can go to the store and buy themselves a production grade cinema camera, right? They can buy themselves a Red Epic or an Alexa Mini,
yep,
or, an FS7. They can spend $20,000 on a camera or more, much more. And then they can become, they can call themselves movie makers. But if they don't know how to use the camera to its fullest extent, if they don't know why they're using the camera, they're never going to be cinematographers. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. It's the same with photography. You can't just go out and buy a high-end Nikon or Canon or something of that sort and then walk out the door with the camera in your hand and become a professional photographer. There's a lot more to it than that, and it's got to be the same with aerial videography.
Right. And so there's a sense that, you know, it's not a get off my lawn moment. I welcome this new crowd. I really do. I put up a very long missive on Facebook about 3 weeks ago. It was like, welcome. It was like 2 days after 107 came out. Welcome to the party, guys. Here are the rules. We like to follow them. Just be aware that it has a lot to do with the art and not the tech. Don't be what I like to call a measure baiter. Don't think that if I just had a better camera, I could take better pictures. We all started in the world that you're joining. We all started with really crappy gear, and we made do because we wanted to make better art. And that's my perspective. I'm not a surveyor. I'm not doing crop surveys. I came in as a photojournalist from the Air Force. I have a passion for telling stories with pictures. I really want to make people feel something when they see my art. So that's my background. It doesn't matter what kind of drone I'm flying. Which takes us to, you know, what I just saw 2 days ago. I got invited by Brendan Shulman, chief legal counsel for DJI now. He went to the dark side. Yes, he was Trappy's lawyer. Everyone knows Brendan that knows anyone in the community. He's an amazing dude.
Yeah, for sure.
I got a chance to thank him in person for all he's done for us at InterDrone. I shook his hand. And while I was there thanking him, three other people did the same thing. So clearly they all understand his role. But he invited me to the Mavic launch at DJI's, they rented a hall to do this launch. And anyone who saw the live cast knows what I'm talking about, but the rep came out wearing a backpack and pulled it off, put it on the podium. And it was about the same size as the GoPro drone that they had just come out with. And I'm thinking, all right, we're going to see a GoPro sized drone. We're going to see, you know, slightly smaller than a Phantom. It's going to be, you know, a little smarter. It's going to be incremental, because that's what a DJI does. They incrementally increase. They're not reinventing any wheels. They're just making it roll smoother, faster, you know, more true, which is a good plan, which is why I feel bad for GoPro starting, you know, 3 years late, which is equivalent to a lifetime in this world. So he starts talking about the drone, and then he goes, and I have it right here. And he opens up the bag and he closes the bag and goes, but it's not here. And then he pulls it out of his back pocket.
Oh, really?
And everyone in the room's like, all right, you got me. You got me. That was pretty damn cool. That was pretty cool. It's about the size of a novel. It's about the size of, you know, I got James Clavell's Shogun sitting next to me on the couch, on the chair in the car. It's about that big. It's seriously about that big. About 8 inches long. About as big around as a 1 liter soda bottle. And it comes with, you can fly it via Wi-Fi off your phone. And it's got some pretty intelligent modes to track on its own and follow. It's got, they call it deep learning, where it knows what you put it on a dog, it's going to know which dog it is as the dog walks away. It's pretty cool. And it uses a phone app, but you can also use a transmitter. And this little transmitter that comes with it, it's got a 7 kilometer range. And it is one of the nicest feeling controllers I've had in my hands in a while. It's got really solid feel to it. It's made of metal. It clamps down on your phone underneath the drone controller. It's got a smart display on it that talks back to the drone. It's a really smart, it's got the same controls that the C1 controller does for the Inspire and the Matrice. It's a really intelligently well-designed piece of equipment. DJI has really been making amazing stuff lately. Anyone who's got an Osmo that looks at that phone clamp, that's this beautiful piece of milled aluminum. Apparently it took them like 15 design changes to make that right. They got it right. They've got 1,000 engineers at DJI, and it shows when you see stuff like this. They were advertising a sport mode, which was pretty amusing, because if you break it, you're not going to be able to fix it. But I'm, you know, it's not a racing quad.
No,
but it's really cool.
I read one report that talked about gesture control.
Yeah, you put it into a gesture control. You wave your hands at it, and it starts to blink. And then you hold up your hands like you're like an old-timey director framing a shot. It sees your hands up in the air framing the camera and says, "Oh, you want to take a picture?" And starts to blink and then takes a selfie. All based on hand. It's like a Microsoft Wii, like a Kinect type controller.
Yes.
It's amazing. And it so you can land it that way. You can take tell it to take off, I believe. It's pretty amazing. I mean, so you can have your phone in your pockets. You don't even have to have the phone out in the shot, because every drone he ever taken has got our controller in the middle of, you know, I'm holding onto my controller like a passy. I'm not a big fan of dronies. I'm not the subject, but occasionally we'll take one. So if I'm in a group of people that thinks it's cool, we'll take one, but I don't ever take pictures of myself with a drone. It's kind of silly. And here I am in another parking lot. And here I am in another field. And here I am standing on the controller. It's like the same shot. My shirt changes. It's the only thing.
Yeah.
My beard gets longer.
I also understand that they've looked at some of the live streaming video services that are out there, YouTube, Periscope, things like Facebook, things like that. And you can integrate the Mavic Pro with those kinds of services, can't you?
They've had that installed in the DJI Go app for a while now. They've always, since they came out with the Inspire, they've had a live to YouTube link. And now I believe you can do Periscope and RTMP, which is a web streaming protocol. Now, that's pretty cool, because that RTMP is a cross-platform protocol, so you can use that across VoIP servers. So you can actually push that to a web conference, and the teleconference can actually use that stream. So that's really helpful for us, being able to broadcast things like construction sites for board meetings. We've been asked to do that a couple times, and it's always been a kludge. Now I just push a button on my controller. Problem with that is you've got one satellite link up, and you're already got a radio next to it, and I never trust a single link. That's why I'm working with Kencast. They've got a bonded cellular. It uses 8 cellular modems to send a HD signal. It works much, much more reliably. We've been using that for that. So, you know, you never want to trust one point of failure in front of a board meeting.
Sure.
But it's a great plan for 99% of the people. It's what the Mavic's the same way. I mean, the age of the personal drone is upon us. When you're going to be able to go to the bottom of a mountain and you're going to sign out, you're going to be able to get, you know, you're going to be able to sign out a set of hiking poles and a Mavic, and you're going to go climb the mountain and fly and take your own pictures.
Now, of course, GoPro also just came out with their new folding arm quadcopter, the Karma. Have you had a chance to take a look at that and see how that
I
might
have
compare?
Not. I have not. I feel bad for them. They had a week to be the only folding wing, you know, personal drone. So, like I said earlier, I kind of view that in the same way as I view the Solo, which is, you know, I've already joined the dark side. There's no point in me trying to eat someone else's cookies. I'm already into their ecosystem. I've got all their, I mean, I've got 3 Inspires, a Phantom, and a Matrice right now. So, and I've also got an Autel X-Star, which I like a lot. Sub $600 drone with more capability than a Phantom 3, for sure. A better camera than a Phantom 4. I really like that drone a lot. I wish it flew better. The problem is that they approached it from a perspective of moving a position point around, whereas DJI started out as a flight controller manufacturer before GPS was even really that good. So they were always a flight controller manufacturer. They were always worried about the flight dynamics and the way it flew. I get the impression that Autel is more about moving a position datum around, and it doesn't fly the same. It flies more like, oh, you want to go over this way now, and it just lunges over. So it's kind of terrifying to fly as a pilot, because it's not actually flying, it's just moving.
Okay, let's dovetail a little bit off of the being a pilot. We've had Max Trescott on, who is a commercial certified pilot and went and got his 107 to fly drones. You're doing it a little in the reverse way, aren't you, Parker?
Yeah, I was one check ride away from my light sport license, which I found to be incredibly informative in the process of taking my 107. The ground school prepared me for pretty much everything except for the 107 specific stuff, which was common sense and something we'd been watching for a while. It really made me realize I was doing my flight training last year, and I was flying along coming into Dutchess County Airport, and it was controlled airspace. My instructor was talking to the tower because I was still learning, and I looked down and I went, oh, look, I've flown this quarry before. And I look up and I'm a mile away from the airport in controlled airspace. And I went, well, I'm that guy now. That was what made me realize that the understanding of the airspace system is critically important to understanding how safely, to making you, to being allowing you to fly safely. That said, I do understand that I was only below 500 feet for about 30 seconds every time when I was landing. No one's that low for a reason. You don't need to be that low, and 90% of the people aren't that low. So I think that there's solutions out there for I'm jumping around a lot here, guys, but you know, I do understand that the airspace system is very it's got rules, and we should know them. And I think that's a great thing for us having to learn. I think the basic knowledge that we have to pick up for 107 is important. I don't know how much weather is going to help me, but I do know that the airspace stuff has been incredibly important, incredibly informative. And when they are telling me I'm not allowed to fly, I need to be able to know when I can and where I can. I have heard from a little birdie that Class Delta airspace approvals are going to start October 15th. Class Charlie airspace approvals are going to start a month after that. And Bravo is going to take quite a bit longer, but they are going to work that issue out. But I live near the Bravo. I live in New York City. So I want to be one of the first people that gets a waiver, because that's good for business when you tell people you can fly there. So the 90-day wait is not feasible. I've got clients calling me a week out, and I have to tell them, sorry, I'd really love to take your money, but you got money for my lawyer? Because we're going to need one. It's been an interesting process. I mean, I filed for night waivers in six cities for a job I'm doing. I filed for a class Bravo exemption for a job I've got to do right across the Hudson. It's going to be an interesting process. I'm eager to see it streamlined. I hope someday there's going to be a digital process where I just file my flight plan through a DNAS type system, where I just file it online and on my phone before I fly, and they give me a green check or a red check, and I just go or I don't go. Or, you know, wait 20 minutes, then you're clear. You know, something like that. Same day approvals would be wonderful. So I think that's coming. That's got to come soon. I also think we should also start carrying ADS-Bs on the aircraft so that they know where we are, so that we can operate in the mast. I saw a really cool collision avoidance grade and ADS-B system at InterDrone that the FAA hasn't approved yet, because they want to have an ADS-B with more. Their requirements state more power, but I don't need to transmit 300 miles on a drone. I need to transmit 5. And their ADS-B receives ADS-B out signals from close traffic, like traffic within 5 miles, and then begins transmitting a low power signal to signal on the 987 band, not the 1080 UAT band, but the 987 band, so that it can basically say, hey, I'm close to you. You need to be aware. It's just like a last minute call. And this is for aircraft that are low, rescue helicopters, things like that. People that are already paying attention to those kind of signals, like a TCAS beacon of sorts, just something that's going to say at the very last minute, hey, I'm here. Don't sweat it, but I'm close. Yeah. I don't need to broadcast 300 miles. They don't want every drone broadcasting out 300 miles.
No, you wouldn't want that.
No, and the FAA doesn't either. So
right. If
they can approve that, that would be wonderful. And that's going to be a box the size of a Spectrum receiver. It's tiny. It's really tiny, little stubby antennas on it. So I would put one of those. I'd spend a grand and put that on my drone in a heartbeat. I really would. I think that's safe, peace of mind for everybody. And then it'll maybe a lot, maybe what allows me to fly in Class Bravo. Shut up, take my money, right?
Yeah. So Parker, as a businessman, where do you see propeller heads going, or where would you like it to go?
We are getting a reputation for being pilots that fly in circumstances that require close coordination with really good production teams. We fly lots of motorsports. We fly a lot of indoor work. That NVIDIA job I had was an indoor warehouse shoot. We've done work in the last couple months for BMW, GMC, ESPN, Ford Motorsports. We actually flew with the Stig for a day, which was amazing. I've done VR work for the New York Times. We went out and had such a successful time with the New York Times that I went out and bought a Matrice to lift a VR camera, because I anticipate a lot more work to do that. And I couldn't lift it with the X8 that I had built previously. It was just terrifying. So I finally went, all right, it's time to fully join the dark side and go heavy. And I absolutely adore my Matrice. So I hope to be doing a lot more work with that. I've been getting a lot of attention saying, you know, look, now we can lift a Red Epic, we can lift a Red Dragon, we can lift an Alexa Mini, we can lift an FS7 if it's stripped down. We can lift cameras now that can make movies, and we have the skills, and we have the experience, and we have the customer base. So that's where I hope to go. Cinema's my joy. Working with production teams and crews and meeting new people and seeing amazing things, and then, you know, putting my drone in my car and going home. That's I don't want to do industrial surveys. I don't want to fly smokestacks or power lines or places that, you know, I don't want to be doing train runs. I don't mind doing it. I would love to do it. We'll fly for food. But if given my druthers, I would much rather shoot a race car on a racetrack and hang out with the Stig.
So Parker, we were going to have you on 3 weeks ago, and you called me up a little dejected. You want to tell us a little bit about your drone on the Hudson story?
Yeah, drone. Yeah. Okay. So here we go. Crashing's part of flying, right? And if you don't admit your mistakes and teach others your mistakes, you're just going to be an idiot and you're going to be a jerk. You're not going to help anyone else get better. You never serve as a warning. Never let your sole purpose in life to serve as a warning to others. I seem to have forgotten that somewhere. Every now and then I lose situational awareness and we have a problem. I was chasing a Viking longboat up the Hudson from a point offshore and plenty of space around the longboat. And we were tracking up with it and it was coming out of Highland, New York. It was heading to Manhattan. We told them we can't fly in Manhattan, but we can fly it on the Hudson. So, and I'm tracking alongside the boat towards the inboard side of the river. And I look up and I see this fuel barge coming up the other way. And I say, are we close enough? And I look at the camera and I see we're pretty close to the boat. And I think that the barge is going to come wide around that and I'm going to be okay. And then something happened and I decided to pull back because the shot was wrong. And we did a debrief later and we said we should have just blown the take at that point. Boosted up, gotten out of the way, cleared datum, and just, you know, reassessed, moved the car if we had to, driven up the river a mile and just done it again. Lost my positioning on the boat because the two of us were focusing on the ship looking forward. From the side, I see this wave come underneath the camera. And I went, oh, crap, full up, aboard. And I punch up, and then a half a second later, the camera goes out. Roll limit exceeded, signal lost, camera's gone. And my cinematographer looks at me and goes, what the hell just happened? I went, I think we just lost the platform. It's gone.
Oh, dear.
It's gone. The barge just hit us. We heard from probably 1,000 feet away, we heard that thing twang off the antenna on the top of the boat. Smacked it pretty good. So I'm despondent because I have to call my wife and tell her I just lost a drone. And it was our only one at the time. And when you have none, and now we really had none. And it was a bad day. I just lost another drone. I lost my camera. I always break the cameras. I hit the ground or I hit things and I break the cameras off because that's the weak point, is the yaw mount on the X5. So I thought, this is bad. This is really bad. I'm insured, but this is bad because I had all my footage on that drone and the client wants his footage. So 2 minutes later, we're walking back to the car and I grab the transmitter. And the rule is you never throw the transmitter because it worked. So you still have a good transmitter. So you don't spike the transmitter into the ground as much as you want to. And I start walking back to the truck up the hill and the phone rings. And it's the director who's in Manhattan doing another shoot. Because the Draken just called us, the longboat just called us. They think your drone landed on the tug. I'm like, okay. They think it's going to Kingston. So we drive to Kingston and we wait for it to come at us. And it goes right past Kingston. And so now I go, all right, now I have a problem and I need to escalate. And I did the right thing, and I'm really glad I did. I called the Coast Guard because that's a fuel barge, and I just plunked an electric drone under the back of it, and it's broken and possibly damaged. And I've got an electric LiPo damaged on the back of a fuel barge. So I call him, and I talk to, you know, a very nice Petty Officer Ruiz, who I explain to him, and I say, you're going to hear the strangest thing you've heard all day. I promise I need to track down this boat. It's moving north under the Kingston Bridge. There's only one. Please tell me the name of it. I need to contact the dispatch office. I need to find out where the boat's going. I need my drone back, if it's on there. 2 minutes later, I get a call from another sailboat that I had been communicating with. And they go, I just heard on the VHF that the tug has your drone. The chase is on. So now I'm like, where's the boat going? I start driving north. I ended up going 100 miles north to Albany and waiting 8 hours for the barge to arrive. They handed me a pile of parts, but I was able to reattach the motor and fly the drone that night. The camera was busted and it's going to cost me $180 to fix. And I got every second of my footage back, including a beautiful shot of the radio antenna as the drone spun in. Yeah. So I went and bought a lottery ticket right after that. And then like an idiot, put it on Facebook and said, look, guys, this is, this is the strangest thing you've ever heard today. I'm now chasing a boat up the Hudson trying to get my drone back. So I have no pride. It's fine. I made a mistake. I lost my situational awareness. In our debrief, which we always debrief, even if we have a good day, we always debrief. And that's one of our keys, is we really went down into the weeds on what happened. And we got task focused. We got mission creep. We kept pushing the bar a little bit. And every time we lose situational awareness on the drone, every time we lose visual line of sight or true knowledge of our proximity to other objects, we have a problem. And it's usually trees. I've never hit a boat before. That's a first. And the boat's never hit me before. In my defense, I was minding my own business and the boat hit me. But that won't hold up. Luckily, since I had called the Coast Guard, when I arrived at the port to pick up my drone, when they called the Coast Guard, because it's a MARSEC area, a Marine Security area, the Coast Guard was able to corroborate my story with the same Petty Officer Ruiz. Thank you, Petty Officer Ruiz. And I was able to get my drone back nearly immediately. But it would have been impounded, taken back to the company, where I probably wouldn't have gotten my footage for a while. Hmm. So I was able to contact the dispatch for the boat. I had an interesting afternoon, but I ended up contacting the dispatch for the boat, and I said, do me a favor, can you tell me where the drone is right now? I said, well, they brought it inside. I said, I need you to unplug the battery and move it outside, please. Put it on the back deck somewhere fireproof on a piece of metal, just in case the battery cooks off. It's not likely, but if it does, I don't want to be responsible for burning your barge down. Nothing happened, but you know, that's my first primary concern is, A, tell me, did anyone get hurt? Did anything get hurt? I'm insured, but did anyone get hurt? No. Okay, good. Can I have my drone back? So that was my second concern. So ended up getting all the footage back. Everyone was happy. We got paid. I learned a valuable lesson. And then the next day we went out and bought another drone and got the first one repaired. So if you have one, you have none. You're going to have mistakes. I have probably got 200 hours on the Inspire. I've got 2,700 flights on that drone alone. I couldn't even tell you how many I've got before we even switched over to the Inspire, but probably at least that much. And I still make mistakes. So complacency kills. Just because you're a pro pilot, just because you have a 107, just because you're out hanging out in the middle of a river does not mean you're safe. Just, you know, just one step at a time, never violate your safety rules, and then you'll probably stay out of trouble. It's that simple.
Yeah, there's a number of lessons here, Parker, that I think a lot of people could think about and benefit from. But even despite setbacks like this, it sounds like the future is pretty bright for you.
Yeah, we're doing well.
Yeah, that's terrific. David, what do you think? It's really nice to hear about someone who's got a business in this industry that's making a go of it and doing quite well. That's encouraging to hear.
It is. And this is the man that gave me my first drone flight. So
yeah, you did well. You did well. And you flew a drone that probably by all rights is an actual real drone. I mean, nowadays we're controlling a position point. You actually flew the thing proper. I'm proud of you. You did well. We actually got it on the camera. So the look on your face was worth it. Even if you'd crashed, it would have been worth it. The smile on your face was epic.
So I'm very happy for Parker. And one of the things that Parker has always stressed is safety. And as much as I'm teasing him about this longboat story, he's always been safety first. And he's a good example for our listeners. So,
we have a saying, make stupid mistakes, get drone parts.
Yeah.
You will get, you know, you can make it once and get away with it. But if you make a pattern out of it, sooner or later, you're going to get bit and you're either going to lose your moneymaker or you're going to lose something valuable like a finger or an eyeball or a client's eyeball. It's just not worth it.
Right. Or a workshop.
Yeah. Yeah, you're going to burn your house down because you're not paying attention to your batteries. So that's another thing I'm glad I don't have to do anymore is charge gigantic LiPo packs.
Yeah. All right. Well, Parker, as we start to close up this episode of the UAV Digest, tell our listeners where they can find Propeller Heads online, any other places where they might look to follow
Absolutely.
You?
Absolutely. We are on Twitter, Prop Heads Photo. In addition to, we have a website. It is propheadsphoto.com. You can also look up Propeller Heads Aero Photography on Google or look me up, Parker Jokers. It's spelled G-Y-O-K-E-R-E-S. There's certainly only one of me. You can even type in Parker Drone Pilot. I think that works. There's a lot of guys out there doing it now, and they're all doing really good work. I'm really excited to see where they raise the bar for the next couple of years of this. I mean, you got to think we're only a month into 107. We're only 2 years into 333 or a year into 333. We're only 3 years into the drone business as a business at all. 5 years from now, we're going to be neurally jacking into these things and, you know, controlling 10 of them at once. And we're all going to have our own personal drone, and who knows, maybe flying around. We may finally get our flying cars, but I think that there's a lot of space out there for new operators. If they just, you know, they're just good people and do good work, and it's a business. There's no difference between running a business, being a photographer or a drone photographer or a cake maker or a cobbler. You've got to make good product, and you've got to be concentrating on the details, and you just got to think about it for the long term.
Great advice. All right. Well, we want to thank all of you for listening to the UAV Digest. This has been episode 164. You can find our homepage at theuavdigest.com. You can find show notes for this episode at theuavdigest.com/164. David, tell everybody where they can find us on social media and online.
You can find us on Twitter at UAV Digest, on Facebook /UAV Digest. We'd love you to join our Slack listener team, and you could do that through our website at theuavdigest.com/team, or just email Max or I at feedback@theuavdigest.com. Leave us some feedback on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher.com. You can always get us some swag at our Cafe Press store, or become a patron of the show at patreon.com. Again, we'd like to thank Parker, my friend and a really good drone pilot. Parker, thank you for coming on the show.
It's been my pleasure. It's been my honor. Thanks, guys. You're like my crazy drone uncles.
Oh, I love that.
So with that, I guess this is David in Philly.
And Max in Hartford.
And Parker in my car on 17 between Rahway and the Burger King.
Thanks for listening.